from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is sugar season in the North Woods. In stands of maple across New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, Canada, the sugar houses are ready for a harvest of sap for boil and steam and maple syrup. It's an old tradition and a very contemporary business now facing climate change. This hour, On Point, sugar season and the maple syrup industry. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you sugar? Just enjoy the syrup. Do you know the stories of cartel and heist and climate change in the woods? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Doug Wynott, journalist and author. His new book is The Sugar Season, A Year in the Life of Maple Syrup and One Family's Quest for the Sweetest Harvest. Doug Wynott, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hello, Tom. Great to be here.
1 year, you say, but it's really more than that you spent in the maple woods, in the sugar bush. 3 or 4 years, seasons you spent out there.
Yeah, I was there for 3 seasons. I started in January, started going over to Bascom Maple Farms in January 2010. I watched the 2010 season, which was a little bit warm, the 2011 season, which was colder and a greater harvest, and then the 2012 season, which was very unusual. It was a very warm season that year, high temperatures, and it brought some problems for sugar makers. And that's the season that my book is based upon, the 2012 season.
Shockingly warm, sort of blowing people's minds there and almost disrupting the very mechanics of sugaring. I want to get just a feeling for where you are on this. And are you looking at this as an industry observer? Are you looking at this as a sugaring romantic? I mean, I love to go sugaring, go out to the Berkshire Hills as every season I can. Mm-hmm. My friends Art and Betty have a beautiful little sugar shack out there, and it's old-timey and small. They do it by tubes, not tins now. But we boil it and boil it, and maybe there's a beer somewhere, and it's a great day. Mm-hmm. What is it, the industry or the romance that draws you?
Well, it's partly the romance and it's partly the connection to the culture. I mean, we moved to New Hampshire in 1997. My wife became a teacher at Charlestown Primary School, teaching third grade. And they took the kids out to the sugar houses so that they could see them and so that they could learn about the local economic culture. So we began going there ourselves and got to know that sugar house, Putnam Sugar House in Charlestown, and then also began to visit other sugar houses. And I see sugar making as a central part of the New England cultural fabric. Sugar houses are places that define the landscape and define the local culture. So we began going to these sugar houses and fell in love with maple syrup making and found a couple of our own that we like to go to each year and get the syrup right there and experience the heat and the steam and the syrup coming off the pan.
Remind us how North American settlers learned how to sugar, how to draw the sap and make the maple syrup.
Well, they say it's one of the first agricultural crafts that was learned from Native Americans, who would also extract the sap from the trees, maybe by making a gouge in the tree or using some way of opening up the tree to gather sap that they would collect in sometimes birch bark baskets or hollow logs into which they would put hot stones. And the hot stones would be used to boil the water. And so they would use that technology to evaporate the maple sap, which begins at 2% sugar. It's kind of a clear water with 2% sugar. And they would reduce it down and down until there was a greater concentration of sugar, making syrup or even making a harder sugar out of it.
There's always the question of mechanics, and some people know it and some don't. What makes this happen? There's a great description in your book. This comes from, I guess, a friend or neighbor of the big maple sugaring operation where you spent a lot of time. This is Alvin Clark. And he describes what's needed to make this all happen. I wonder if you could read a little bit for us his explanation, Alvin Clark's, of the maple sap flow.
Mm. Yes, I asked Alvin to tell me his explanation of how the maple sap flows. And he said, sure, he said, there has to be enough water and the leaves have to look good in the fall, good color and not falling off the trees early from drought as they did in some places this year when it got warm. When it starts to get above freezing, up into the 40s in the daytime and below freezing at night, water starts moving up the cambium layer. The sugar is stored up in the branches, having been made by the leaves in the previous summer. The trees pull the water up from the roots through the action of barometric pressure. When the trees are starting to flow, they are absorbing heat, and you can see a ring around the trunk of the tree. The water is coming up from underground because of the thaw, but also because the ground doesn't freeze more than 3 feet down. The sugar maple is a sensitive tree. They are just like humans, in that sap is like blood. They are very sensitive, and that's why they are in danger from climate change.
You get those warm days and cold nights and a kind of pumping action that sets in and the sap starts to flow.
That's true.
This has been a very cold winter. So has the sugar season begun yet?
No, it hasn't begun. It's very delayed. It's well beyond when it should have started. And now the concern is the opposite of the warm season in 2012, in that winter may be prolonged and prolonged, and then all of a sudden spring will come on. April, we'll move into April, and we'll have a sudden, fast spring and a very short season. That's happened many times in Canada. This is more like a Canadian winter than the normal New England winter. So they've had shortages in Canada in some years, 2005 through 2008. This happened year after year and resulted in an international shortage of maple syrup. So they are concerned now that this cold weather will delay and shorten the maple syrup season.
Though we've all learned about this great reserve of maple syrup to help them to tide them through shortages like that, if it should come. I learned a lot about flavor in here as well. If it goes too late, the trees will be budding, and the sugar masters you talk to, they don't like it when the syrup begins to taste buddy. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, buddy is syrup is the from the sap that is produced when the trees start to make buds. And so one way of describing it is that they have a leafy taste. Another way is that they have a sour taste. And the syrup doesn't taste very good at all after that time. And so when the syrup turns buddy, that's usually when the season is over.
And that's not a good time, not the greatest time for making maple syrup.
It's the end of the year.
The subtleties of maple syrup flavor were really something new to me here. I mean, I sort of know, like everybody, grade A, grade B, lighter and darker and all the rest. But here you've got flavors like marshmallow and dark brown sugar, coffee bean, roasted dandelion root, and then you get into coconut and mango and even hay, you say. Do they really talk about the syrup in this way?
They do. That those descriptive terms are from a flavor wheel developed in Quebec. And experienced tasters will use those various adjectives to describe maple syrup. The most common one that I've heard is vanilla. And vanillin is a flavor precursor in maple syrup. So that's one of the flavors descriptors in maple syrup. But maple syrup, the maple flavor itself, is sort of indescribable, and it's an iconic flavor. I think of it as the only flavor. I've been asking people to name others, but I think of it as the only flavor that originated in North America. You can think of chocolate and coffee and those others. They're international or foreign. But the maple flavor is something very special. And many other industries try to imitate this flavor. The artificial pancake syrup industry is an $18 billion industry based on imitating this flavor. So the maple flavor is something that's very important nationally, internationally, and to this culture.
There was no version of this in Europe, no version in Northern Asia, I don't know, Northern China, only North America.
Only North America.
Because only maple trees have sap that flows in this way with that sugar content?
Yes. They have maple trees in Korea and in Japan. Mm-hmm. And in Korea, they extract the sap from the trees, but they use it to purge. They fast and drink maple sap as a way of purging. They
rather don't than make making syrup.
Yeah.
So incredible. And the size of this industry now, you talk about the artificial maple goo industry. What about maple syrup? How big? How much is sold every year?
Well, it's between 120 and 130 million pounds. If you divide that by 11, that's about 10 or 12 million gallons.
Of sap that it takes to produce? No, I see gallons.
That's maple syrup.
11 pounds per gallon.
11 pounds per gallon. And so The world crop is around 120 to 130 million pounds. The U.S. crop is about 20 million to 30 million pounds. And the Canadian crop, the Quebec crop, is 70 to 80% of the world crop. So Quebec is producing the majority of the world crop, and they control the world price.
So American minds, of course, go to scenes in Vermont with the sugar shack, or New Hampshire, or even Maine. But really, the Goliath here is Canada across the border.
That's right. And Quebec is the Goliath across the border. And that is, well, that's because partly they have a culture that they are as passionate about as we are, and more so.
I mean, that maple leaf is right on their flag. So.
That's right. They have the great symbol on their flag. And also they have what's called the Quebec Federation of Maple Syrup Producers, which is an agricultural union.
Or a cartel, as it's
been
called.
Well, it's been called a cartel, yeah.
The OPEC equivalent in maple syrup. And they've got a history of crazy stuff happening, even gigantic heists we read about a couple of years ago.
That's right. There was a huge heist of maple syrup from one of the Federation warehouses after the 2011 crop. The Federation had rented another warehouse, and they stored a lot of syrup there. And during the fall and winter of 2011 into 2012, a group of people went into the warehouse, took the barrels of maple syrup, emptied them, put them in a tanker, filled those barrels with water, most of them. Some they left empty, and that's how they were discovered.
10 million, was it gallons? Something huge. It was a very, very big heist. We'll look at it. We've got to take a break right here. Doug Weinert is with us. His new book is The Sugar Season, A Year in the Life of Maple Syrup and One Family's Quest for the Sweetest Harvest. Here's Pete Seeger and friends with Maple Syrup Time. This is On Point.
I know it's not the quickest system, but each year I can't resist it. Get out the buckets and tap the trees in time. Making it is half the fun, satisfaction when it's done. Keep up the fire, maple syrup time.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about sugaring, the world and harvest of maple syrup, from the tapping right now to your table. And sugaring tales of heist and cartel and climate change. Doug Weinert tells it all in his new book, The Sugar Season. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. It goes very deep in the whole business of maple syrup, deep in the sugar bush, the maple stands, beautiful maple stands that bring us all that wonderful syrup. And the context around that, business context, climate context, it is it's a big and wonderful story. Here's a little bit of a 2010 promotional video for Ben's Sugar Shack, Newbury, New Hampshire. Owner Ben Fisk explaining part of the evaporation process here in maple syrup production. The sound you hear in the background is the Sugar Shack evaporator at work.
As it boils, it gets thicker, and more sap keeps coming in, and eventually it will drop down into this float box. And you can see in here the sap coming down.
Maple syrup gets everywhere. Even got into the 2005 comedy Wedding Crashers. Owen Wilson, Vince Vaughn talking about their alter egos for a crazy wedding day they're about to crash.
Okay, what's our backstory?
We're brothers from New Hampshire. We're venture capitalists.
Sick of that. Let's be from Vermont, and let's have an emerging maple syrup conglomerate.
Yeah, that's stupid. We don't know anything about maple syrup.
I happen to know everything there is to know about maple syrup. I love maple syrup. I love maple syrup on pancakes. I love it on pizza. I like to take maple syrup and put a little bit in my hair when I've had a rough week. What do you think holds it up, slick?
They're maple syrup entrepreneurs, and off they go in Wedding Crashers. Hey, I've got calls coming in already saying, don't forget New York. There is a lot of sugaring in upstate New York. Among the American states, what's the sort of division of output, Doug?
Vermont roughly is first. They produce 40% of the national crop. New York is second. Maine is third. And Ohio, I think, is fourth, and followed by Wisconsin.
Okay. So even Ohio's far enough north that they get something going on
there
as well.
They have a good syrup crop there. Yeah, in the northern part of the state. They have a long history of making maple syrup, and they make a lot of it.
The old way was over a fire, often just an open fire, boiling in a big flat pan. We heard there in that little cut about an evaporator. What's the latest technology in the sugar houses that have become big and industrialized?
The big industrial sugar houses have evaporators that are very quick and that are powered by high-pressure steam. And the sap before it enters those evaporators is reduced, the water content is reduced, and the sugar content is increased, concentrated through what's called a reverse osmosis machine, which is like a desalinization machine used at sea, except they don't throw away the salt and all the minerals. They keep the sugar. And they can reduce sap, which is originally at 2%, down to 8% or even higher, up to almost 20%, so that instead of boiling 40 gallons of sap, they're boiling 4 gallons. And at Bascom's, they're able to produce a gallon of maple syrup Once every 22 seconds.
And it takes how many gallons of sap to make that gallon of maple syrup?
About 43 if the sugar is 2%.
I want to talk about that wonderful sugar bush at Bascom's there. Let's take our callers as well, though. Brian in Collinsville, Connecticut. Brian, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Doug Winant.
Hey, Tom. First, I want to say, Doug, thank you very much. I had to pull over because of all the information you've been sharing about sugar shacks, and it sounds like you're very knowledgeable on the subject, which I think is pretty
Thank you. Topic,
pun intended.
Thank you.
So my comment was this. We've got relatives, we found out, that run a sugar shack up by Lake Champlain in Vermont. Mm-hmm. In last year, you know, we decided to, cabin fever struck us pretty hard, and we said, we need to get out there and see what this is all about. One of the best experiences I brought my 13-year-old son and wife on because, you know, we learned about gravity feed, we learned about the boiling, all mm-hmm. the things we were talking about, and my son to this day is waiting for us to go back up there. So my comment are two things. First of all, thank you very much for, you know, the knowledgeable discussions today. And secondly, I would invite anybody like myself who's tired of the winter to put the boots on and get out there to your nearest sugar shack.
Amen.
And quite a few rounds.
Bravo.
You know, get out and experience it. I mean, to get the family out there and get some fresh air and mm-hmm. enjoy a cup of hot tea with something warm, it's a real joy and a real privilege to have here in New England, and and it's something that I had to literally pull over because I think I was just so pleased to hear the subject matter, and you know, thanks for a great job.
Hey, Brian, thank you so much for your call. Drive safe, but yes, it brings a kind of magic sensation to mind for a lot of people, and we understand that right here. Let me get one more, if I may. Northfield, Massachusetts. Michael's calling. Michael, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I'm actually calling because I'm on the road right now out to Northfield to put in the first taps of the season.
Is it warm enough that they're going to start running, or are you just anticipating one warm day, cold night coming up soon, Michael?
I'm hoping for it to run today, but hopefully it'll run over the weekend. I was checking the weather, as I usually do around this time of year, checking the 10-day forecast.
Is it a business for you, Michael, or a hobby? How many trees are you going to tap?
For me, it's just a hobby. I put out about 35 to 50 taps. I used to share with one of my neighbors who put out about 50. And he would come by and bring me firewood, and I would let him use the sap from the middle of the week. And I would just come out on the weekends. But now I'm just on my own doing it, and I'm just having a great time. It's it's the best time of year for me. I look forward to it every year.
Enjoy it. We will think of you out there putting in those taps, and we will envy you, Michael. I hope you have a good season of sugaring. Doug, give us a sense of the range of operations. What's small? What's medium these days? What's large in the United States for sugaring operations?
Well, small is like what those fellows have been talking about, where you have a small pan, and you maybe make 5, 10, 20 gallons of syrup.
Michael's got 50 trees.
He's got 50
something
trees.
Something in that neck of the
woods. So he might make 15 to 20 gallons of syrup if you make a half gallon
mm-hmm.
per tap.
Mm-hmm.
Without tubing, it might be a quart per tap. So if he has 50 trees, maybe he's making 12 gallons of syrup.
So what's a medium or large operation in terms of numbers of trees tapped?
I would say 1,000 to 2,000 taps is medium. I mean, then they're getting serious about it. They're selling it.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a lot of work. They might have a reverse osmosis machine.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 4,000 or 5,000 taps. That's what Alvin Clark has. That's what the Rhodes family has. And then above that, you're getting into some more serious commercial operations.
Talk about the serious operation that you watch, Bruce Bascom's operation. And this is not some hedge fund guy who bought it coming in from New York. This is a family operation that he's built into one of the biggest in the United States. This is in New Hampshire. Describe the operation where you spent a lot of time, Doug.
Well, Bruce actually inherited the business from his father,
mm-hmm.
who was a dairy farmer who had sugared all of his life, as his father had.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1964, Ken Bascom decided to sell his dairy herd and go into maple syrup production full time, which was a very risky thing to do. No one had done it in his region. And Bruce was 14 then.
Mm-hmm.
He decided at that time that he would like to do it someday. That was the lowest point in the maple syrup industry at that time. From the Civil War, when it was at its peak, it had gone down to 10% of production at that time.
It wasn't popular. It was too expensive.
Well, there were various things. It was expensive. Mm-hmm. Labor was expensive mm-hmm. to empty buckets.
Mm-hmm.
The 1938 hurricane had devastated the forests in New England.
Mm-hmm.
And many people had sold their trees at that time to mills that set up in order to harvest maple trees.
Just took the trees down, turned them into kitchen tables or whatever it might be.
That's right. That great wood from comes from maple, that tiger maple.
Sure.
So anyway, maple tubing came in the 1960s and changed the industry, made it commercially viable again.
That is, instead of having individual buckets on each tree, you just run the tube tree to tree and it's going to drain into a bigger vat somewhere.
That's right.
You've got the photographs in your book of the old two-horse hitch dragging that great tank around through the woods.
Yeah.
The buckets dumped into it. That was over when tubing came in.
That's right. Ken Bascom. Those photographs were of Ken Bascom. Mm-hmm. Well, Bruce went to college and graduated in 1972. He went through the business school, unlike his relatives who went mm-hmm. through the ag school. And he did a senior project of 25,000 taps on tubing, draining into a central sugar house. Mm-hmm. And when Bruce came back from college, he borrowed some money. He started putting up tubing. His goal was to prove he could do it better than his dad. They were competitive in that way. And pretty soon, Bruce had the Bascoms had the largest maple syrup operation in New England.
He stuck his neck out. Farms around happened to come available, sugar bushes, maple stands. He bought them. People thought he might be a little crazy buying all that up.
Yeah.
It worked out pretty well.
It did. He now owns 2,400 acres of land. He started out with 300 or 400, maybe a little bit more.
Was that like a mile by 3 miles?
Yeah, that's
something?
Right. A mile and a half by 3 miles of land that Bruce mm-hmm. owns, all under agricultural conservation easements.
And how many tapped maple trees in that acreage?
And, well, they work on about 800 of those acres. And during the season, when the 2012 season that's my book is based on, mm-hmm. they had 65,000 taps.
Wow.
The other day, Bruce told me that they're up to 80,000 taps now.
Wow.
They produce 27,000 gallons of maple syrup last year.
27,000 gallons. How many people work on that stand?
Well, they have about 5 people working in the woods. They have about 350 miles of plastic tubing, and they have people who are walking those lines all the time looking for leaks, mm-hmm. air leaks, because that plastic tubing is on vacuum. It's on vacuum pumps, and the most extraordinary thing about it is all of that tubing, those 350 miles, is under negative pressure. It's under lower pressure than the atmosphere.
Is it vacuum just to pull it to the sugar house or to pull it out of the trees?
It's to pull it out of the trees.
Really?
And at Bascom's, they pull it into gathering tanks. Some of the most the most advanced operations in Vermont, northern Vermont and other places have their tubing go directly into the sugar house. But because of the layout of the Bascom's land, they move them into big storage tanks and then move them by tanker trucks back to the sugar house. They gather 70,000 to 80,000 gallons of sap per day.
This is a huge operation.
Yeah.
With that vacuum, do they depend on the warm day, cold night to have the tree pumping, or can the vacuum pull it regardless?
Well, that became the interesting thing about the 2012 season because, yes, usually it's 25 to 45 degrees. That's the optimum time.
You need
time.
That swing, and then the tree
you
begins.
Need that
it,
swing.
The sap's running up and down, pulling that sugar out
it's
of the
It's called the freeze-thaw period, that delicate time of the year, 25 mm-hmm. to 45, freeze at night, thaw in the day. Mm-hmm. But in that warm season, they proved that they could gather sap on the 50 to 75 range with tubing and vacuum. And so that technology becomes a way to cope with warming winters.
Now, you write in here about how they're pulling sap out of all these trees, 65,000, 80,000 trees tapped. That's big numbers. We're going to hear in a moment from David Marvin, who's got a very big operation in Vermont, comparable in size, I think. But there's also a huge trade in the sap itself and the syrup. I mean, people moving this around across state borders, across international borders.
That's right.
What is that about? Why would I be buying or selling sap? Is that like buying or selling bulk grape juice in California to make wine? I don't know.
Well, people like David Marvin and Bruce Bascom, they're the two largest. They are processors who they make a certain amount of maple syrup, but it's a very small fraction of what they sell because they're selling to various markets throughout the U.S. and internationally, grocery stores and other processors. And so they have to buy syrup from all over the place. They have buyers, they have producers, maple syrup producers supplying them throughout Vermont, throughout New York
supplying
State.
Supplying them sap or syrup or both?
Syrup.
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 Okay.
And in Canada, Quebec ships a lot of syrup into the United States. And Bruce Bascom has a buyer in Canada who's going out to 150 different sugar houses in Quebec and the northernmost boundary of Maine, and buying syrup up there. It's in 55-gallon drums. They bought 40 trailer truck loads.
Wow.
In 2012, and I think last year, it got up to 60 trailer truck loads that were shipped from Quebec to Bascom.
Now, here's where we start to get into some of that sticky business. When those, whatever it was, 10 million or...
Well, I have, that's the figures I have right here.
The big heist up in Canada.
10,000 barrels.
10,000
million
barrels.
Pounds.
Okay.
$18 million worth.
Okay. And turns out, I think, a bunch of that ended up in the United States.
Yeah, that's right.
How is there a black market in like stolen or just unknown origin maple syrup running around out there?
There is a black market in maple syrup because of the Federation surplus, because of the quotas that were established after the Federation took over what's called a marketing order, control of sales of bulk syrup.
And so you've got Canada with this reserve ocean. How many gallons or million pounds in this reserve that they hold?
Well, that varies year to year, but it gets to be 40 million pounds, 60 million pounds, which is double sometimes of the U.S. crop that they're holding in reserve in case of a shortage.
Here in an interview with Reuters, Anne-Marie Granger-Gobeau, executive director of the Federation, said that all this does raise concern about a maple syrup black market.
Every high-value product has imitation and has a black market. So we don't know how much is this black market. But, of course, those people, they had a motive, and they will probably find a market for this maple syrup.
So here you have this huge heist. You had Canadian law enforcement down in the U.S. trying to track down where all that syrup went. Did they figure it out?
Yeah, they did figure out, and there are going to be trials later this year. They brought that syrup into the U.S. at just the right time because maple syrup is produced this time of year, and when the crop is done, that has to last all the way till the next season.
Mm-hmm.
And so that syrup showed up in this country, I think, during this part of the year, just before the season begins, when there are shortages, and when producers who have held their syrup for the whole winter in order to take advantage of a possible shortage are putting their syrup on the market at lower prices.
So would the buyers have known they were buying hot syrup, heisted, stolen syrup?
No, no one knew about that because the discovery wasn't made until July 30, 2012, long after that syrup had been sold.
So who's going on trial, the thieves or the buyers?
It's the people in Canada who stole this syrup and distributed it.
And who's,
I don't think
who's
anyone
charged
in the,
with that? Was it people inside the business? Must have been. They knew exactly how to do it.
Well, as far as I can tell, it was people who were called barrel rollers. And those were the people, you know, who bought syrup before the Federation came into business. And they and Bruce Bascom used to buy from barrel rollers in Canada. These were people who bought from the producers up there and sold in the U.S. But when the Federation took over and established quotas, well, there was some controversy about that. And as Anne-Marie Granger-Gobeau, when I spoke to her about the black market, said, it's human nature to do that. If this extra syrup is out there, someone's going to buy it and try to move it. So that's what happened. Those people stole a lot of it in 2011.
We knew there was romance around maple syrup. We didn't know quite what an aura of even, I don't know what, a heist and a black market and all the rest going on here. Doug Winert is with us. His wonderful book is The Sugar Season, A Year in the Life of Maple Syrup and One Family's Quest for the Sweetest Harvest. Here's Gordon Lightfoot, Love and Maple Syrup. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Love and maple syrup shine like amber swan, like thoughts divine, they tell us it is spring. Love and maple syrup stir the thoughts of people into words of songs that they can sing. Love and maple syrup go together like the sticky winds of winter when they meet. When lonely lovers come to rest beneath the trees, they do the best, but still they can't be free.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about sugaring the world and harvest of maple syrup from the tapping right now to your table, and sugaring tales of heist and cartel and climate change. We'll look at that. Doug Winert is with us. His new book is The Sugar Season. Here's a little Canadian ad advertising Snyder Heritage Farms maple syrup, selling the romance.
It happens every year. The sun shines brighter. Snow melts. Trees stretch their limbs. Away from the hustle, the aroma of sap fills the air. Born from Waterloo Region, This is Snyder Heritage Farms Maple Syrup.
Well, I feel like I'm drowning in syrup right there. Of course, it's not all romance and tinkling piano keys. Back in the time of the heist and talk about the cartel, The Daily Show had some fun with this. This was back in sugaring season, February 2013. Quote-unquote reporter Jason Jones here investigating for Jon Stewart and The Daily Show, the world of powerful Canadian maple syrup cartels.
Everyone knows about the drug violence being perpetrated by the ruthless Mexican cartels. But we haven't heard that much about the violent ones up north, in Quebec. I sat down with a local reporter who agreed to speak with us on the condition we protect his identity.
This is a big deal in Canada. Globally, the industry is worth about $400 million a year, and the cartel accounts for about three-quarters of all that production.
So what are we talking about here? Coke, heroin, marijuana?
Maple syrup.
The Daily Show's take on the world of maple syrup. Doug Weinert is with me in the studio. And with us right now from Morrisville, Vermont, David Marvin joins us. Maple syrup entrepreneur, founder, owner, president of Butternut Mountain Farm, the largest processor and distributor of maple syrup in Vermont. Has about, I don't know how many taps. We'll ask him. David Marvin, thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, Tom.
It's great to have you with us. So you know very well, I'm sure, Bruce Bascom and his operation in New Hampshire. Are you guys big rivals for the crown?
Oh, not so much for the crown. We're rivals in business, and we're contemporaries, so I've known Bruce a long time.
Doug writes about a year that had incredibly warm temperatures. I mean, up into 60, 70, some places even 80 degrees. And there was a lot of talk about how bad the harvest was, what climate change would do to sugaring and maple syrup production in this country, that it would move north maybe all up into Canada. Are you worried about that, David?
Well, I am worried about it. Of course, I'm much more worried about it for people who are going to be disadvantaged in other parts of the world more than we are. But in terms of maple, we're in the geographic sort of epicenter in northern Vermont of maple. I think it's going to be more of a concern what production is going to be like in the southern range of the industry, in Massachusetts or Connecticut or Pennsylvania, Ohio, places like that. It's a concern, though. We have to be prepared earlier every year to because the onset of the season is coming earlier.
Is it just a given now in your circle of sugaring folks, David, that climate change is happening? Have you seen evidence of a distinctly changed sugaring season?
I think the two things that are most remarkable are the fact that the beginning of the season is earlier than it used to be, even when I started 40 or 50 years ago, and the season is usually finishes earlier. And then there's a region, a fairly large region in northeastern Quebec on the far east, but on the south side of the St. Lawrence River, that's producing syrup, which historically never did. The snows were too big. There was almost like a Arctic kind of season there. It went right from winter to summer, but now they have a spring, and the industry has moved into that area. That's a big change.
I've got listener questions maybe I can put to you, David. Here Matthew asks, and others do as well, about they'll see organic labels on some maple syrup. And they're saying, well, how can some maple syrup be organic and other not? Is there a difference, or is it just a label, David?
Well, I'll try to be clear about it. In order to be labeled organic, you must be certified. That's the new USDA requirement. Good sugar makers who really care about the stewardship of their forest are going to be inherently organic in the production techniques they use, with the exception of we all need to use a very tiny amount of defoamer to keep the sap from boiling out of the pans,
mm-hmm.
And an organic operation will use a non-synthetic defoamer, a vegetable oil of some kind. With new people moving into the industry who haven't spend generations at it, there's been some concern that they'll convert northern hardwood forests to large monoculture stands of maple without thinking about biodiversity and about what it is that we need to do to be careful to sustain the use of the maple forest for generations. We can tap the same trees for over 100 years, but you have to care for them. So the organic certification simply verifies that that's what's happening. It is a wildcrafted product that's inherently organic.
Here's another question. I don't know if this is sacrilege even to ask, but NJ says there's been some work done with making syrup from species of trees other than maple, hickory, black walnut, birch. Could the guests comment on this? What do you say, Mr. Maple Farming David Marvin? Is there the possibility of that?
Well, there is a birch syrup industry, a very small one in Alaska. And these other trees do run a little bit of sap, and it's usually not very sweet. And consequently, it takes a tremendous amount of evaporation, even after concentration with reverse osmosis, to make a syrup from those other species. And it's usually heavily caramelized. I mean, frankly, it's not very good, and that's not just coming from a maple person, but it's a lot of work, too. Birch sap is usually 100-plus gallons to make a gallon of syrup versus the 40 that we use.
I think that gives maple a pretty clear advantage. And what about this from Kathleen and others echo this? It's just, I'm wondering, who can afford maple syrup these days? You know, next to become rare and phenomenally costly, who can, I mean, you look at, many a time myself, I've begun to reach out and then it's, you know, $15, $20 for the bottle, and maybe not this time. What about the price of it? Does it need to be that expensive for this whole business to work, David?
Well, it's very, very labor intensive, extremely expensive to make. We use a lot of energy, although a fraction of what we would if we didn't have the reverse osmosis that Doug talked about. It takes a concentration of 40 to 1. We're working in wild stands that are difficult to access, and it's very labor-intensive to manage the hundreds of miles of pipeline that we have to service during a very short season. In addition, though, I would say maple is, it's not expensive per serving. It's a delightful, healthy, really natural product, and you get what you pay for. It's far better for people than consuming artificially flavored high fructose corn syrup.
Well, it's definitely delicious. I don't know. My kids may pour it on differently from you. I don't know about the serving size.
We eat a lot of it in our family.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, but then you own the sugar bush, so you're in a pretty good position. David Marvin, it's been great to have you for a few minutes here. Owner of Butternut Mountain Farm, big processor, distributor of maple syrup up in Vermont. David, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Doug Wynette, lots of response here online. Joe says, love my Quebec number one amber. Says up there they call it sugaring off, visiting the sugar shack, and feasting. Joe says, we make our own syrup at home here in Vermont. Love my B grade, thick and fully flavored. Karen says, Wisconsin native, love maple syrup in my brandy old fashioned. She makes it part of her a little nip there. What about A grade and B grade? If I recall correctly in your book, you're talking with a waitress in a diner who says she gets better tips when she serves B grade maple syrup because maybe it's got a little more pungent flavor.
Yeah. As the season begins, the syrup tends to be lighter. And as it progresses and various yeasts work upon the sugars, they are changed. And the composition of the sap changes as it's coming out of the trees. So further into the season, generally, it tends to get darker and some people think a little richer in flavor. And there was that sugar maker in Putney who I talked to who delivers sap to a diner in Cambridge. And the waitresses ask for B grade because they say it has a better flavor and they get better tips. And when he brought a lighter syrup, they complained.
B grade and up go the tips. Jay in Fredonia, New York, where we are reminded a whole lot of maple syrup is made. Jay, thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just had a quick question for your guest. I was just wondering, my mother has multiple maple trees on her property that are tapped by the local sugar houses.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, they've been tapped for as long as I can remember, and does it do any damage to the tree after years of tapping?
Great question. Doug, what do you say?
Well, David Marvin said that you can tap a tree for 100 years, but tapping is a skill, and not anyone can do it, and it has to be drilled in the correct way, and the holes in the tree have to be placed in the correct way, meaning basically you can't put them too close together in a cluster because after that tree has been wounded – it seals over that wound. And so you get a kind of a dark spot in the wood. You see that when they harvest it. So those tapholes have to be placed strategically around the tree so that it can continue to be healthy and to continue to produce and survive.
Do a little reading up to do it right, it sounds like. But if it's done right, a tree that goes 100 years is a tree that's doing pretty well.
That's true. And the holes are only 5/16 of an inch, a little bit over a quarter of an inch. That's a very small hole. But the pressure in the tree pushes the sap out, and of course the vacuum pumps help pull it out too.
We're looking at sugaring in the world and harvest of maple syrup. We heard about a new way lately, which doesn't sound quite as romantic, but maybe effective. Saplings, kind of sawed off saplings, and vacuuming up the sap with or without the big temperature change between night and day. Is this the future of maple sugaring? We won't have those big, beautiful sugar bush stands or even the color in the fall, just a bunch of sawed off saplings, and here comes the sap?
Well, this is a new technology that's been developing at the Proctor Maple Research Center at the University of Vermont. And in this technology, small saplings, it takes quite a long time for a tree to grow to be tappable, a few decades. And by in this new technology, by lopping off these saplings, they're able to produce 10 times more sap. And actually, they're pulling the water out of the ground through these saplings, sort of through the tree, gathering the sugar and pulling it out. But this is a very new technology. It's going to be a long time before it proves out.
Let's get a call from Vermont here. Dennis in Jeffersonville, Vermont. Thanks for calling, Dennis. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a long-time listener and first-time sugar producer.
Great. Oh, first-time sugar producer. What are you tapping for the first time this year?
I am tapping. I'm selling the sap to someone that's going to boil it. But I've been, a long time as a Vermonter, a long time involved in maple syrup.
How many trees are you going to tap, Dennis?
Probably about 2,500 this year. They've already been tapped.
And I have no idea. 2,500 trees, what do you expect to make selling that sap, roughly?
Roughly, I am currently, because I'm working very cooperatively with the people that are boiling, I'm charging 75 cents a tap.
So, all right. So it's just some nice, a nice little piece of change there to have some fun.
Just which logging has not done. I've got about 100 acres, currently 40 acres are under sugar bush.
Dennis, good luck with that. We hope you have a good harvest this year and it all goes well for you. Doug Wynett, climate change is something I hear a lot about when I go out sugaring, years when they just don't even do it because it's too short or too late, or the trees just don't look healthy enough. They don't want to mess with them these days. What do you see coming on the climate change front when it comes to sugaring?
Well, during my research, I saw two warm seasons. And the first warm season led me to some climate change reports in which I learned that the average annual temperature in North America has increased by 2 degrees since 1970. And according to some predictions, if emissions increase at the present rates, we may have a 6 to 10 degree change in our annual average temperatures. And if that happens, winters are going to be seriously affected. The snowfall will be seriously affected. This freeze-thaw period will be diminished.
And you quote Barry Rock up in New Hampshire, professor, saying, "I think the sugar maple industry is on its way out."
Yes. Well, that's a possibility. According to one climate change report, if this happens, this 6 to 10 degree change, the climate of New Hampshire will resemble the climate of North Carolina. That's a very scary proposition, but possibility. But according to the reports, they mention maple syrup industry often because it is so dependent on this delicate freeze-thaw period during this time of the year.
Of all the things to talk about over sugaring, that seems one of the saddest, that the very environment that has allowed it to flourish and be such a distinctive part of life in this part of the world could be disrupted. Do you hear that talk in the sugar houses?
No, I sometimes, but not so much. Maple syrup producers, my feeling about that is that they tend not to want to talk about that. They tend not to want to think about the end of their industry or the possibility of the demise of this culture, which is so important to their families, their communities, their livelihoods. So I haven't experienced much talk about it. David Marvin has talked about it frequently, but generally not.
Well, It's out there, though,
yes.
And they are wise and sophisticated. They know it.
Yes.
Tiny changes.
And they're tapping earlier.
They're tapping earlier. Tiny yes. changes in temperature over time mm-hmm. make a huge difference here. A way of life, a beautiful product, a mm-hmm. gift of nature, kind of on the line in some yeah. of these what could become borderline sugaring areas.
Yeah. During 2012, when the temperature got up into the 80s for 10 days, the sap was coming out of the trees like jelly. It came out like cottage cheese at David Marvin's.
Wow. Doug Wynot's new book is The Sugar Season, A Year in the Life of Maple Syrup and One Family's Quest for the Sweetest Harvest. Our compliments to the Bascom family and their operation where you spent so much time, and to you for this wonderful write-up. Doug, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
We'll go out with Diane Cordes and Maple Syrup. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Kids take the first taste. They like to lick the spoon. Papa takes a second, make sure it ain't too soon to put that sweet maple sap in two jugs and wine the cap when you make the syrup in the old shed tonight. Pile the wood on, stoke the fire till it's snapping bright. We'll be making syrup in the old shed tonight. Put that sweet maple sap in two jars and wind the cap when you make the syrup in the old shed tonight. When you make the syrup in the old shed tonight.